Blog Talk Radio.
God bless America. Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen over in Studio A, and Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, good evening. It's getting kind of chilly.
Good evening, Mr. Allen. This is a memorable night on behalf of some in America. The third debate, I imagine a lot of people will be listening. But we are, as usual, breaking some major news stories involving acts of violence against African Americans, which I'm quite sure will not even be touched on the debate or by African-American commentators other than ourselves. So, again, Mr. Allen, it's a pleasure. So why don't you go ahead and open it up, because there's some allegations of misinformation in the sector coming from this program?
Yeah, oh, exactly, Mr. Edwards. You know, I was listening to a radio show on a local public second-tier radio station, and I was shocked to hear one of the hosts deny that a local agency here in the Twin Cities received a dollar amount from the Minnesota State Legislature during the legislative session of 2016. And it was odd, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, I did my research, I did my homework, and I actually came across the document, which I'm going to pull up and put on the screen now, and it's also going to be on the website, that this agency, well, in fact, did receive $4.2 million. And now my computer wanted to run slow over here, but I'm going to actually pull it up as soon as I – here we go. Yes, thank you. Here's the interesting part, Mr. Edwards. There's a list on page 8 of the Omnibus Supplemental Budget Bill, Chapter 189, House HF, House File, that's HF, 2743, signed 6-1-16, clearly after the legislative session. Under summer youth employment, $1 million in additional funding for youth at work competitive grants for 2017. We don't even know what's, no one's even asking about that, Mr. Edwards. And other equity and job provisions in the Omnibus Supplemental Budget Bill include the Department of Employment and Economic Development Grant, fiscal year 17 funding. That's the, you know, the fiscal year from October to October, basically.
October 2016 to October 2017. Am I correct?
Yes. So, yes, you are correct. So, if you skip down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, right under the $750,000 for the YMCA, YWCA Minneapolis, it says clearly, Mr. Edwards, in Helvetica font, it says, $4.2 million, Emerge Community Development Grant.
And can you give us just a little bit of background for our both domestic and international audiences? Emerge is who? I mean, it's an emerging organization, or is a organization that has been in business? Who is Emerge, and who are their leadership?
Yeah, well, from what I understand, Emerge is led by the executive director, Mike Nguyen, who also houses some other folks from other agencies like Pillsbury United Communities and a couple other groups. And the resource center for people looking for jobs, they direct a lot of traffic as far as funding goes. And I guess it's supposed to be a key player in that area throughout, as well as throughout the city, for job training, job placement, and some type of education component, which I am not totally aware of, Mr. Edwards, so for me to speak on it would be out of line.
Okay, could you just indicate for our listening audience, Mr. Allen, this organization known as Emerge under the leadership of a man by the name of Michael Nguyen, where are they headquartered? Edina, Bloomington or where?
North Minneapolis, if I'm not mistaken, it's Emerson.
Oh, right in the heart of the area. Okay, all right.
Of the designer poverty zone. Yes, that's what we're going to call it. But see, Mr. Edwards, you know, this is supposedly part of that $35 million going to $35 million going to the to stem generational disparities in the black community. But if you look under here, there's a semicolon at the end of $4.2 million, Emerge Community Development Grant. It says $1.2 million, the Twin Cities Rise Grant. It says $1.2 million, Twin Cities Rise Grant. $1 million, Minneapolis Foundation North at Work Grant. We've never heard of that. And $2 million, Minnesota Redevelopment Grant Program. So that equals $4.2 million. Now, from what I understand, none of those agencies under the umbrella of Emerge $4.2 million, divided any way you look at it, is still $4.2 million, and they have Emerge listed on an official city and state document. None of those, from what I understand, are black-operated or owned agencies.
Now,
and so with that,
these are nonprofits or these are for-profit? You said you made an indication of the possibility these were corporations. These are nonprofit agencies, correct?
Or these are nonprofit organizations that operate in the guise of poor people and God.
Okay,
nonprofit organizations. But you know, I'm looking at this this report and. We also have to mention that the mayor's husband, Gary Cunningham, received $2.4 million, but he works with MEDA, Minneapolis Economic Development Association, that under the leadership of Yvonne Chung Ho back in the day. You can have a business or idea and go down there.
Well, Ms. Ho is no longer there. In fact, Mr.
I understand.
Is the executive director taking that position about a year ago. Okay.
Yeah,
so that's an organization called MEDA. Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
MEDA. But I know MEDA from way back when Yvonne Chung Ho was the executive director, and how flexible and how cordial and diplomatic they were with community members.
Uh-huh.
And so now I understand it's very difficult to work with MEDA, and you know with his leadership change. But anyway, make a long story short, the mayor's husband, you know, his agency. MEDA, $2.4 million. And so with that said, let me just get up here real quick. $2 million went directly to Somali youth and community resiliency programs.
Okay.
$1.5 million went to the Latino community grant, CLUES. $2 million went directly to the Southeast Asian community grant. $1.5 million non-traditional jobs for women grant. $2.5 million went directly to Hennepin County Career Connection. But I don't see anything that went directly to something that's black, Mr. Edwards, on this list,
which is
troubling to say the least. You know, every other community.
Well, I've heard people say that the organization known as Emerge is a African-American organization, though it chief administrator is a Caucasian. Is that the accepted logic of many in the community? And how much, again, I'm a little puzzled, how much money has Emerge allocated to the organizations, the Minneapolis Urban League, Stair Step Foundation, and Sabathini Community Center? Because we heard many, many programs during the summer that these were three African-American organizations which were to receive, am I incorrect, Mr. Allen, $4.2 million to deal with employment and primarily at-risk youth? Is that, am I being fairly clear on that narrative as I sit here in Studio B?
It's very surreptitious, Mr. Edwards, because there is not a really focus on detail here at all about where this money is going, who's getting it, and it's clearly here And we have talked about it periodically, almost every other show, because, you know, we're sitting back as journalists, not as nonprofit agencies, but as journalists, and just asking the question. You know, you and people are a little bit shaken when you ask these questions, and, you know, they come back with things that are basically fairy tales in a Tim Burton, Johnny Depp movie. Because they're,
okay, so
they're
let
not
me just ask this question, Mr. Allen, for the purposes of continuity of legislative intent, and I repeat that again, continuity of legislative intent. Oh. All summer long, I was aware of negotiations that were going on that were tied into maintaining the peace and trying to reduce violence in our community, in which a number of people have been homicide victims, including at least two infants who have been shot and killed, as an example. Now, you're saying to the listening audience, though you have the documentation front, you're saying that there was no allocation in the period from June 1, 2016, to today, the 19th day of October in the year of our Lord 2016. You're saying that no African American organizations received money to put at-risk youth and et cetera to work?
I see nothing that would indicate that. I see no programming notes. I've looked through this, Mr. Edwards. I looked through several things. Now, granted, they might have something somewhere, but it's not public knowledge. And I'm pretty sure once it gets out, all hell will break loose. Because
now, am I to understand that this organization known as Emerge, if you will, located in North Minneapolis, if you will, just a couple blocks away from the school district's headquarters, beautiful building there, built without black employment. But am I understanding correctly that that following negotiations, that no money was allocated? Is this the reason that there have been acts of violence against both the organization formerly known as ACORN, now Neighborhood Organizations, whose building was firebombed, and Emerge, which some of its trucks were shot up a couple weeks ago, and then there was a major confrontation inside of the building, fighting, guns drawn, and et cetera. Now, is there something here that we're not being told, that money was withheld from the African-American community in an attempt to find young men and young women employment during the summer of 2016? I mean, am I off base here or what?
I don't think you're off base at all, Ms. Harris. I think that we have a challenging issue here that is becoming, you know, a bad deal all the way around. Now, I just was privileged enough to see some pictures of some things happening over in North Minneapolis that were posted by someone on social media. And I saw shot out windows and things like that. And I said, wow, you know, what's happening? There are more stories behind it than we are privileged to know as the general public or even as journalists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's shocking because what you have to think of the psychology behind someone going to Target an agency's vans and shooting the windows out. Why would that happen? Was it over money? Was it a conflict? Was it an employee there? Was it you know, there's so many questions that are unanswered that probably need to be answered that, you know, people are actually ducking and dodging.
Well, now, the organization known as Emerge, obviously as a nonprofit, has a board of directors. Who is the board and who is the chairperson of the board? Do you have that information on your computer over there?
Yeah, I am looking right now, but I think the chairperson is Ms. Sandra Samuels. Just let me see. I'm looking right now.
Sandra Samuels is a powerful group that deals with education, funded, to the tune of, about $27 million here just a couple years ago. Now, she is the chairperson of the Emerge organization?
I am actually, I'm going to have it right. Oh, okay, I stand corrected. It says Emerge, about Emerge. The chair is Colbert Boyd.
Who?
He's Colbert Boyd.
Okay. Boyce. Okay.
Yeah. Boyd.
Not,
B-O-Y-D.
Not an individual by the name of Boyce Jones, but Colbert Boyce. Okay. Because
Colbert,
I know that Boyce
Boyd.
Jones was supposed to be one of the lead principals in the negotiations this past summer, but he was relieved of duty here a couple of weeks ago, as well as the deputy director was also relieved of duty. And
mm-hmm.
I know that there's been a lot of discussion about what the heck has happened here. Do you have a breakdown of the staff? Who is the staff of this powerful Emerge group and the even more powerful education consortium headed by Ms. Samuels?
Well,
is Ms. Samuels a member of the board, or were we incorrect?
No, not
there?
On this. Not, we're incorrect, but the thing is, Colbert Boyd, B-O-Y-D, is the chair. That's his last name. And and Mike Wynn is the ex-official, president, CEO, Emerge Community Development. You have a community volunteer named Michelle Keaton. I remember Michelle. Mercedes Jackson, corporate attorney, Frederickson and Byron. You have Jimmy Bostic, reimbursement manager. For a medical surgery supply company, and David Wagner, VP Marketing Partnerships at General Mills, Trisha Brown, Interaction Center Director for a financial company, and Jason Moore, who is the works for Edina Realty. That's Emerge. If I look at the leadership, I see Mike Wynn, CEO, Janet Ludden, Executive Vice President, Linda Bryant, Vice President of Community-Based Services, Kevin
I don't
Engel,
think
Vice
that
President.
That Linda Bryant, I don't think she's with the organization anymore, but we're quite sure that someone can clear that up. Okay, so that's a very powerful staff, and they're located right there in the heart of the 55411 zip code district, the one that was used
mm-hmm.
to hire so many African Americans to work on the stadium, right?
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
So I'm just looking here, thumbing through here.
Of course, there's
and,
no documentation to attest to that, though. People have been saying it, but the documentation that the legislature voted and enacted into law to be made public is on July 1, 2016, cannot be found. But, again, we're merely here to provide information and documentation. But go ahead.
Yeah, and so I'm just looking at this after 2014 990s where they went into 2015, looks like with about $6 million. I mean, not shabby at all.
$6 million. I'm puzzled by that because the Rondax Group, which is the political oversight group that I'm involved with, has been told by young African-Americans who were involved in these negotiations during the summer 2016 that they were informed by Mr. Wynn that he would be able to do nothing for them after initially telling them in early September that he would maybe be able to look at them in October. And just a week and a half ago, he told some individuals that were part of the negotiation group that he wouldn't be able to do anything for them because he had a cash flow problem, a shortage, until probably January. So
yeah,
you're saying that
on page 12, reconciliation of net assets, part 11, number 10, net assets or fund balances at the end of the year. This is the end of the year, 2015. Combined line 3 through 9 must equal part 10, line 33, column B, $6,791,410.
And then the $4.2 million would have been added on to that, even though there's certainly cash flowing out, and that would bring Emerge to over $10 million. And so they kind of sounded like Wells Fargo Bank. So they were sitting on that amount of money, and they told young African-American negotiators that there is now a cash flow problem. They would not be able to do anything. And these meetings began as early as right after the signing by Governor Mark Dayton that you made reference to at the top of this discussion, 6-1-16. Am I correct again?
Oh, you are absolutely correct, Mr. Edwards. You are absolutely correct.
I see. So where does that put us with regards to, should we then not talk about this and do what we traditionally do in this community? We pretend that we're planning for next summer?
Yeah, that's usually what happens. You know, we're going to talk
okay,
about
it. Okay, now should we project casualty figures? Oops. Well, I mean, you know, we want to be kind of militaristic, if you will, and do it as, you know, we're told. So if you're going to talk in terms of preparation for the next coming year, based on what has been happening the last, you know, two decades, that we will have, unfortunately, casualty figures because we will have people who will not be worked, et cetera, contrary to documentation that emerges out of nowhere. Oh, I'm sorry for the double meaning, but emerge out of nowhere that indicates that we are enjoying the most significant period of economic prosperity that the Negro community has ever known. Right?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Now, at the end of 2014, Mr. Wynn's base compensation, according to their 2014 990s, was $138,000. Plus non-taxable benefits of $23,204 for a total of $161,000.
Oh, okay. So he was living pretty good, even though the young men that were dependent upon his organization to provide some sustenance were, quote-unquote, basically starving to death unless, you know, they were committed to selling drugs and carrying out criminal activities, which is what they did not want to do. And there are many out there, including some that have been critical of you over the last 4 to 5 days, Mr. Allen, who know that, the desperation that went on in the summer of 2016 to try to get something firm and committed, if you will. Well, I just don't know. Where do you feel that we're going for, we will go from here, particularly in that people were saying that Emerge never received the money, and there you are sitting with the documentation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the point is and why they don't look at what I'm looking at or what we're looking at here in studio, Mr. Edwards, because it doesn't make any sense. Because it's not what I produced. This is not something I posted on my blog. This is something that is an official document, state and city document. That the state says this, the city said this, it has a breakdown of where the money is supposed to go, but we don't hear, Mr. Edwards, we don't hear anything from the Minneapolis Urban League, Sabathany, CareStep Foundation, and I don't think they're going to rise up against the massa on this at all.
Well, I had heard statements that there had been some money allocated, but and that we're now, and you are certainly being criticized and attacked for saying that none has been allocated. Now people are saying that Emerge never received the money. Well, you know, maybe we could ask someone to suggest that they contact the legislative auditor.
Ooh.
And ask for an immediate financial diagnostic to find out what happened to the money, right? I mean, that's what it kind of comes down to, even in a conversation like this with, you know, individuals who are certainly not on the inner circle or been in all the meetings and et cetera. But if $4.2 million has just kind of disappeared, I mean, you know, we have an obligation as citizens here in the state of Minnesota to ask the legislative auditor to examine what happened to the $4.2 million.
Exactly. That's where we need to find out what's happening because, you know, there's not a lot of economic movement in North Minneapolis among the people that actually live in North Minneapolis. Now, there's economic movement with those agency heads who are making six figures and going home to Woodbury, Edina, and other places in the state other than North Minneapolis.
Be careful about mentioning Edina now because we'll be talking about that in just a couple of minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, again, the phone lines are open. Why don't you give that number out? Yeah, maybe we'll have some people that could maybe make us understand what the heck happened. I know that the situation has become perilous, if you will, at a very perilous time here in the United States, and that's certainly we're talking. The presidential debate is going on. You and I are watching them on our monitors in our studios and et cetera. But I don't hear any discussion going on like the one we're having here, and the one we're probably getting ready to have in the next couple of minutes with regards to the level of increased violence in the United States. Not violence coming from, you know, the black people, you know, but violence mm-hmm. coming from those who represent the epitome, if you will, of order and civility, right? Right?
No, absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
That number,
yeah.
Call in, that number is 347-426-3904. Caller, you're live on the air with the Ron and Don Show.
Gentlemen, this is Mr. M calling in.
Oh, yes, M. How are you doing, sir?
Hello.
Very good, very good. I, you know, was really, obviously I want to hear what's going on with this Edina thing. I mean, this is, I've been getting texts and emails from people around the country and things like, so now you can't even walk down the street if you're black in Minneapolis. You know, I mean, it's just, it's embarrassing. I mean, it's just, I'm getting texts from Houston, all people, what's going on up there?
You can't even be black and walk out of your house.
But I'm sure you gentlemen will, you know, we'll get into that. And I did want to just comment on it a little bit about this Emerge program that you're talking about, because I don't know anything about it. And maybe because I live in South Minneapolis, not North Minneapolis. I mean, by still
Oh, no, but Emerge is across the entire spectrum, if you will. It just happens to be located in North Minneapolis and has been for a number of years and has been under the management of the Mr. Michael Wynn, a Caucasian administrator. And
well, I noticed you had made some, you know, I mean, you had some statements, you know, about Emerge and, you know, seemingly ineffective. And so I pulled up their website and it, you know, it says Emerge is a lead agency in a new collaboration focused on racial and economic disparities. they highlight new growth, more opportunity. 2015, we partnered with 3,119 people as they redefined themselves. So I looks like the Emerge is emerging. I mean, if I look at that.
Well, I cannot speak for my colleague, Mr. Allen, on this because it is certainly a sensitive matter. I could not concur with that advancement, if you will, of positive activities that I have no indication or firsthand knowledge. I do have firsthand knowledge of very, very serious and sometimes dangerous negotiations that went on starting as early as March and February when the legislature was putting together the final package that Mr. Allen has made reference to, the $35 million package. Mr. Allen has given us from his studio some specific numbers, which are certainly troubling to me when I'm very much aware that young or, you know, African-Americans who were attempting to do it the way the system says do it, and that is negotiate, and did basically hold the peace for at least 4 months during the summer of 2016, who had misrepresentations made to them by Emerge in regards to working with disadvantaged youth, as Mr. Allen pointed out in his opening reflections from the data and the documentation that you, sir, also M, have made reference to. What basically happened twice in a month and a half period of time, they were told by Emerge and by the leadership of Emerge that Emerge was withdrawing from negotiations and that they would have nothing more to do. And then they changed their position and said that monies would not be available, monies which back in, May, even before the governor officially signed the legislation transferring the money, that there would be employment, significant employment, economic opportunity, training, you know, the whole gamut that you've just cited.
That's messed up.
Messed up, G. Yes, it is. And so what basically happened is that it didn't happen. You know what I mean? And young men became very angry, particularly as we went into August. I'm just giving the dates and the timelines. There was concern by the city of Minneapolis, if you will, who has been very supportive of Emerge, and as they were of the organization formerly known as ACORN, now known as the Neighborhood Organization, if you will. And no one would step up and support some of the chief negotiators who really put their lives on the line, because you know when you get to fool around telling people that there's going to be economic opportunity and they step away from a Pacific lifestyle, you know what I'm saying, Em, and want to embrace the right way to go and do work and et cetera. It's just like people were being told they were going to go to work on the Viking Stadium, you know, which really never happened, and now we got all kinds of statements being made, but no documentation to support the 37% to 38% to 40% of African Americans and others that allegedly worked on the stadium.
Well, there's an interesting statement, you know, on the Emerge site, and it they mentioned something called equity appropriation.
Now, that's a Harvard word. That's a word I haven't heard since Harvard, and yes. But
what
go
is
ahead,
that?
Sir, you have an observation. Go right ahead.
I mean, no. I mean, what is that? It's an equity appropriation.
Well, it goes back to the original language that actually started in his first term when Governor Mark Dayton almost 8 years ago came together with the community over there at an organization called UROC, University of Minnesota Research Institute for, you know, to examine colored people. And the governor stated at that time in a room full of community people that kind of commitment was what was in place, dealing with the issue of equity and et cetera. And so during the legislative session, the last legislative session, which is what is called a short session, as you know, that word became a significant word, identification tag, if you will. And so people were talking in terms of the amount of money, and then we heard the amount of $35 million was being committed to the communities of color.
Yes, as I look further into this, I mean, and this UOC Partners, it looks like, you know, some of the Stairstep and Sabathany. Sabathany seems like they're involved. I mean, Sabathany.
Sabathany, UROC, and the Minneapolis Urban League were supposed to be recipients of money coming through whatever that bundle of money was.
It says $37 million in equity appropriation approved by the legislature seeking to address racial and economic disparities. October 25th launch event. That's the best.
Is that October of 2017, 2018, or not October of 2016?
Well, you know, there is not a year on this. It says,
I just said October.
I'm assuming that it's this year.
Well, Mr. Allen, I think earlier, and then of course we are, and we have no problem with it. We are on what is called on demand, and so you can go back and examine any statements that we have made. And Mr. Allen, just about 9 minutes ago, pointed out that documentation indicated that it would be from fiscal year October 2016 to fiscal year October 2017. Am I correct, Mr. Allen? I do not want to misrepresent or misstate what I thought I heard you say.
Oh, yeah, you are absolutely correct for the fiscal year 2017.
Well, it does say timeline, you know, services are currently getting underway on our plan throughout 2016 and the entirety of 2017.
That is just, I have to say, particularly in the name and the spirit of young African-American men, women, babies that have died during that particular period of time of negotiation, et cetera. That is just totally untrue because the chief negotiators who were involved and really put their lives on the line this past summer, they were told as recently as 2 weeks ago that there would be nothing available and their proposals and et cetera would not be considered. Let me just say this, gentlemen. I have to now, and I just received a text in which I'm being specifically told that I'm now released from the confidentiality piece, because people are pretty upset with what how this discussion is going.
Well, I should bow out. I mean, I don't
No, because they are talking in terms of what they were told. They were specifically told that under no circumstances would there be any further negotiations, nor was there any guarantee of any funding from the very monies that both you and Mr. Allen, my colleague, have been making reference to, and that at best maybe some kind of preliminary discussions would start again in January.
What I'm reading, this must be, maybe it's out of date, or maybe there have been some happenings after this was posted, but it says October 25th, launch event from 5:30 to 7 at the Bethany Community Center, where plans will be presented for a new set of opportunities to tackle racial and economic disparities in our community. So maybe that's a kind of a plan. I don't know. If this emerge is very intriguing to me, so I'm doing a little bit more research on it, and I live in South Minneapolis, and I would maybe plan to attend such a thing if it happens. You know.
I think that the date needs to be repeated again by this program, October 25th at the Bethany Community Center. The plans, because here's the problem. Two specific organizations, and I've been authorized to reveal the names of these African-American individuals. The Urban Consortium, under the leadership of a man by the name of Ferrone Brown, who was the subject of an excellent newspaper article about 3 months ago, who has been involved actually for years, but since 2005, with the assistance, gentlemen, of the General Mills Foundation, has had an organization called the Urban Consortium, and they have been working with the young men out here. Their record speaks for itself. In late April of this year, they submitted a proposal, a written proposal. You know, us colored people are told that's what we needed to do is put it down in writing. You know what I mean? Not that verbal stuff. Get it down in writing.
Sure.
And so the Urban Consortium, under the leadership of Mr. Brown, submitted a proposal that went to the city of Minneapolis. It went to the Metro Council, the Metro Transit Authority, and et cetera. In fact, one of their agents actually asked for a copy and then kind of began to plagiarize some of the materials that had been developed by Mr. Brown. Now, this document has been in the hands of the city and other organizations. And then there was a second organization who a couple weeks later, joining with Mr. Brown, called RACOI, under the leadership of the Reverend Charles Yates and a gentleman by the name of Mr. Jerome Copeland. Now, these men went out, brought in a 15-page proposal and et cetera, and submitted it to Emerge. And the Emerge would not even respond to them by a telephone call and ultimately told them that their written proposal would not be considered. So I'm going to be, and we want to thank you for finding that information. I'm going to be fascinated on the evening of the 25th to see what organizations come forward with proposals and when those proposals were actually put together.
I'm just fascinated by going on their website. It looks very professionally done. It looks well put together. It says the UOC partners, tells the five agencies and the services, GED preparation, employment readiness, career training, job placement, retention, outreach, community to support. Those things are sorely needed in our community.
Could you identify again for us, you said eight organizations are identified in this public announcement. Could you identify them again for us?
Yeah,
and link it, Mr. Allen. Let's try to link it to our computers. But go ahead. Thank you.
Well, it says UOC is comprised of five agencies, including Emerge, the Minneapolis Urban League, Sabathany Community Center, Stair Step Foundation, which I hear so much about. I've never really, and the Minneapolis Public Schools.
Oh, okay. Indianapolis Public Schools. Okay. And so they will be making presentations on how to deal with the problem of training, employment, and safety, and et cetera, for what, the spring of 2017 and summer
of
2017?
Yeah, well, you know, again, you know, the ending, it gives a timeline.
Okay.
And I think, you know, Mr. Allen referred to a timeline, but the exact wording of it is UOC services are currently getting underway and are planned throughout 2016 and the entirety of 2017.
I see. Wow. Well, I think there will be some individuals paying visits to Emerge and those other organizations, because young African-American men who, you know, folks talk about they're scared of and all that kind of thing, submitted proposals to meet the prerequisite and the requirements, as I said before, as far back as April, even late March of this year, and then were turned down and rejected. So, I mean, is there some kind of rigged game going on here, gentlemen? I'm not understanding what's happening.
Maybe it's just the five agencies that are keeping it amongst themselves. You know, maybe the – I don't know.
Why, that's fascinating. Okay. I know we've got some calls coming in. Let me just ask you this question, M, because it's fallen real silent here in our beloved Minnesota. Do you have any questions or reflections on the latest African-American victim found in the Mississippi River just outside of Winona, Minnesota? That is,
you know, I have not heard much about that except from a few texts and some information I think I saw streamed from Mr. Allen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've heard absolutely nothing about that. I mean, What
young man, student at Winona. I think he was probably on a partial athletic scholarship. I understand he was a wrestler. His name is Nigerian. You know, normally you would think in a situation where a student disappears right there in the city
huge news, huge.
Yes. Well, it didn't happen. Now, Mr. Allen and I have uncovered some information which says that the angle that's going to be used, I don't want to be provocative, is that they will say that he slipped and fell off a ledge or something like that, hit his head or something.
He was drunk. He's drunk and slipped and fell.
Yeah, they said he was drunk. Yeah.
Yeah,
intoxicated, inebriated, et cetera. Though that's not what in a series of interviews by KSTP with some white students who were very friends of his and spoke very positively of him, who saw him just about an hour before he went out for a walk and disappeared, that he was studying. You know, seemed like this was a young man of color that was very conscientious. But the reason I raised the question to you, sir, and for our listening audience across the country and the world, is that my friends in out in Idaho from the command center of the Americans for a Whiter America have congratulated their compadres in the Winona area for taking an appropriate action in revenge for circumstances in St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Mm-mm-mm.
I'm stunned. I'm stunned.
This just in. Hubbard Broadcasting owned KAAL TV reports that on the night his nickname is Ben was last seen, authorities said a man who lives on a boat said a black man had gotten on his boat. The boat owner told the man to leave. The boat owner then went back into the cabin, they changed from a boat to a cabin, and said that he later heard a splash.
So he left someone on his boat where, by law, he is the supreme caretaker of his property, and he left an African-American. This is clearly because I believe that TV station is in La Crosse, Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken, which is actually kind of downriver from Winona. He left an individual who was trespassing on his boat, went back and laid down, watched some TV, went to sleep or did whatever, and then he heard a splash. So
yeah.
When did he tell the authorities about that? Because the young man in question has been in the water for 2 weeks.
Yes, he has. Yes, he has.
So that's where they found him submerged in the in the river or something?
In the river, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. In an area that looked like it has bridge paths and et cetera. So he must have been hung up there on a tree limb or et cetera for 2 weeks. But I looked at the pictures of where they said they found him when it was shown a couple of days ago by the Minnesota stations. And there are footbridges there and et cetera. So I don't maybe he bobbed to the top. But Mr. Allen has just broke an exclusive piece.
Wow.
Because now we're being told that, wow, that's really unbelievable. So that confirms the posting by white supremacists in Idaho, that's where their command center is. We've been talking about it for a number of years. I think him and others well remember that they were praising their colleagues in Minnesota and a place called Winona, Minnesota, for taking appropriate action as a part of the vendetta against black terrorism in St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Boy, we still live in the 50s. We still live in the 40s and 50s.
30s, 20s, yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Allen, could you read that, please, again for our audiences across the continent and around the world? And this just came in. Could you give the call letters of that station? Because I'm pretty sure that's a station in La Crosse, Wisconsin. If you could, please.
Yeah, let me scroll down to that real quick here. It's Hubbard Broadcasting owned KAAL-TV. Reports that on the night that Ben was last seen, his name is Onya Yigehawa, which is Nigerian. And I know I just messed up his name, but his nickname is Ben. Last night that Ben was seen, authorities say a man who lives on a boat said the black man had gotten on his boat. The boat owner told the man to leave. The boat owner then said he went back into the cabin and said he later heard a splash.
Wow.
Jeez.
And they've been keeping this so quiet. Gentlemen,
really?
This comes on the heels
that
of
has
what...
been really kept under wraps. I had not heard anything about that until, you know, Mr. Allen, and he needs to kind of brush up on his Nigerian language, lingual skills, but...
Yes. But he's certainly... Wow, because that is consistent, I repeat again, from the intercepts that I and my investigative group have made with regard to claims of action by white supremacist groups in northern Idaho who coordinate efforts all through the Midwest. In fact, we will be having an update. And, Em, maybe you want to stay with us. We're going to have an update on the attempted white terrorist attack in Garden City, Kansas. But also let me say this. I've been reminded, I just received a text message from off the East Coast asking us and reminding me to be sure to pay our respects to a 66-year-old African-American woman shot and killed inside of her apartment by a white New York City policeman last night.
She had a bat or something?
Even though she is on the register of the New York City Police Department as a apartment occupied by a mentally ill individual, there were certain responsibilities and et cetera that the New York Police Department and Fire Department would have if called to that apartment. Police officer maintains that she grabbed a bat and attempted to attack him. I got to tell you, I've seen pictures of the little hallway in her little apartment, and boy, it's been pretty tough for her to swing a bat either way. She was shot twice in the stomach. We call that effect wounds, and she died a very painful death with two shots in her lower torso, if you will. In fact, she actually bled out while they were allegedly waiting for emergency responders. New York's kind of hot right now, but they're trying to cover everything by talking about this this debate, which really doesn't have anything to do with anything positive for African Americans. But I wanted to do that. I had made a commitment to sources on the East Coast that certainly this program, other programs, would remind our people that a 66-year-old African-American woman gunned down. I just could not envision, Mr. Allen, I couldn't envision a white police officer in New York City shooting an Irish or Italian, you know, a grandmother.
Hey, guys, listen to this. A uniformed sergeant encountered the woman who was naked and armed with scissors, officials said. He persuaded her to put down the scissors, but as soon as she did, she picked up a baseball bat and tried to hit him with it. That's when the sergeant fired two shots from her service gun. The woman was struck twice in her torso.
And that's coming from the New York Daily News or the New York Times?
Yeah, that is coming from Channel 4, New York, the NBC affiliate. I'm actually looking at the police sergeant shot a 66-year-old on the 7th floor in her apartment
in the Bronx, New York. She allegedly was nude. Okay, so what? She came to the door nude with a pair of scissors in her hands. Is that what we're supposed to be led to believe? Because my understanding is they used a passkey to come into the apartment and startled her. And so then she threw down the scissors and picked up a baseball bat, right?
It says, to me, it's very difficult to understand how a woman who is 66 years old and has emotional problems should have to die like this, especially if there are four or five police officers in the room with her.
Well, did they say why the police were called to her residence? I mean, why were
they? Yes, the initial report and what I received from sources and associates yesterday in New York City was that a call went out that there was some kind of disturbance in and about the apartment. Now, you got to remember what I said earlier, and Mr. Allen, I think, may have it there in the story. He's texting it over to me, but I already am aware that her apartment and her name and her age were already on the register of the New York City Police Department and Fire Department as a person that suffered from mental illness. So when they came to the apartment, according to activists in New York City in conversations with yours truly, that they knew that this was a woman who was mentally disturbed.
Okay.
They never announced that they had used a passkey to open the door and to step into her apartment.
Okay.
Now they're saying that she had a pair of scissors. Wow. All day yesterday, it was just the baseball bat.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of reminds me of the Edina situation where we're now hearing that Brother Thomas was intoxicated and that the officer, that Lieutenant Olson, smelled alcohol on his breath.
Why did it come out after the fact? I mean, why does that come out after?
Well, everything comes out after when we're the victims.
Exactly. And you know what? I purposely, after I heard about that, and we do have a caller waiting, but I'll get to him after this statement. I watched three news channels the other morning, Mr. Edwards, after I saw that on social media. And each of those news, whoever are the producers that are writing the scripts for these anchors to read, meticulously calculated and put in there that he smelt of alcohol and he was walking on the wrong side of the street. When in fact, what the fact of the situation was that there was construction on the sidewalk and a normal person goes around the construction. You don't walk on no freshly poured cement or construction and dirt, get your shoes messed up. You walk around. And this police officer just thought it was great to come over and harass this guy for walking on the street, cross the street, do this, do that. He doesn't have to. There's no law that says that. There's not even a law if he was drinking. There's no law that says he can't consume alcohol if he's over a certain age.
If I'm not mistaken, he is like, 27 or something like that?
Oh, he's old enough to get to
He's definitely a consenting adult. You're absolutely correct, Mr. Allen, and that's part of what the uprising was at the Edina City Hall. And I understand that there may have been problems tonight at the park board where a fairly decent-sized group of protesters have confronted the park board. Some folks had already been indicated they would be trespassed, if you will, if they came to the meeting. We're at a very high level of volatility. And also, gentlemen, before we take this next caller, Mr. Allen, let us also remember the arson of Trump headquarters in Orange County, North Carolina. That's a real cutie, if you will. But do I want to get the caller in, Mr. Allen? M, feel free to stay with us. Mr. Allen, let's get the caller in.
Yeah, I'm doing that right now. I'm getting back to that page here. Caller, you are live on the air on the Brown and Don Show. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling from Missouri.
And hey, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was just I just found that story in New York very interesting. Now, I kind of find it hard to believe that a grown man, police officer, can't subdue a 66-year-old woman, even with a baseball bat.
With backup.
Yeah, with backup. And, you know, he's got a stun gun, probably has mace or pepper spray, too. And they have to shoot. I mean, that's just...
Two shots to the lower torso, which is one of the most painful deaths that one can have, to be shot in that particular area of the body. And basically, my understanding is from activists and sources in New York City that she was in great pain. Her neighbors could hear her crying out for help. She basically bled out laying in the hallway of her own apartment.
That's just unbelievable.
Right. Now, sir, I understand we had talked earlier. I understand that you are the individual. Your organization has additional information on the white terrorist attack, planned attack there in a place called Garden City, Kansas. And we've been kind of waiting on you. Could you indicate to us additional information that your organization has gathered about the extent and depth of the conspiracy?
Yeah, well, the three gentlemen who were accused in this conspiracy to kill the complex that they were targeting had about 120 people in it, and they belonged to a group. These three gentlemen belonged to a group called the Crusaders, but a lot of these groups they kind of overlap. They belong also to a group called the Kansas Security Force, which is
the KSF.
Now, KSF.
This is what, a official group of the state of Kansas?
It's actually a militia group. And, and they think they have about maybe about 45 members or so throughout. And the thing is that group, which is also part of a group called the 3% Security Force, which has chapters all in, like many states around the country, is headquartered in Georgia, and is headed by a guy named Chris Hill, who apparently in a statement said that he didn't know these three individuals personally, but that gives you the kind of idea of what I mean. They're all kind of overlapped. There's so many different groups. They go by different names, and these people seem to, be involved in one group or the other. So,
well, if I could ask, sir, what are officials in the state of Kansas, what are they saying about the depth of this kind of terroristic activity? Because, you see, if this was some black folks that we're talking in terms of doing damage. And I understand that the gentleman who shot up the Jewish mosque in your part of the state there a couple years ago was an active member of one of the subgroups. The gentleman, what was his name, sir?
Frazier Glenn Cross. Springfield, Missouri. Yeah, around Springfield. So.
Oh, he comes out of Springfield, which is
But interestingly enough, he came originally from North Carolina. So,
they get around. What is the latest situation? What kind of preparations are being made to protect Muslim/Somali citizens in Garden? Could you tell us very quickly, what kind of little town is Garden City? Because I will remember from my own roots that Garden City, Kansas, has always had a African-American presence since back in the 1850s.
Yeah, it's a town of about maybe 27,000.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, it is now a majority community. That changed about 2007, 2008.
And what does that mean, sir?
What happened was that about 75% of the population is white, but about half of them consider themselves Latino or Hispanic.
Oh.
So, that's basically, you have a large Latino population there. And then African Americans.
They work in the food processing industry there in
yeah,
Garden City?
In
like
the
Tyson
process.
Foods, an organization
Tyson,
or
yeah,
corporations like that?
Yeah,
okay.
Tyson is actually the largest employer there.
Right.
And that's where the Somali community, most of the Somali community was working there. So
about 120. And my
understanding
about
100, is it's this complex, although there's somewhere, they said there's somewhere between 300 and 500 Somalis in Garden City in that area.
All right. Basically all of them working for Tyson, right?
Yeah. It seems like, the overwhelming majority of them seem to be working for Tyson. Although the area as a whole is really kind of an agricultural area.
Yes.
So,
Garden City is basically like in the southwest corner of Kansas. Is it down close, kind of close to the Colorado border, or is it the Oklahoma border?
No, it's close to Colorado. Actually, there's a town just south of, about an hour south of Liberal, Kansas.
I'm familiar with Liberal.
That's where one of the gentlemen lived. That's actually right next to the Oklahoma border down there. So, Liberal is actually just almost exactly like Garden City. Basically, it doesn't have the same kind of meat packing plant, but it's the same, about 20,000 people. So.
Okay. All right. Down in that part. All right.
Yeah.
Have civil rights groups spoken up and asked for a federal Well, of course, it was the FBI that ran the sting operation that took these individuals. Is there any anticipation? Because I noticed that the FBI agent in charge is an African-American. Oops.
Yeah.
Gentlemen.
Is
there anticipation of additional arrest and et cetera, particularly in light of some of the postings that I'm aware of that have come from, again, the Central Command Post in Sandpoint, Idaho, praising the white brethren, if you will, for defending white democracy and white survival? Because some of them call themselves the survivalists, don't they?
Yeah. And then sovereign citizens also. They call themselves.
Oh,
so.
Sovereign citizens.
Sovereign citizens.
Well, we want to continue to coordinate, sir, with you and your organization, because it is quite clear, and again, it appears that we've already broken some information here that has been suppressed here in Minnesota, that a young Nigerian student at a large college in a place called Winona, Minnesota, not to be confused with Winona, Mississippi, was clearly kidnapped, tortured, and murdered. And Mr. Allen has just found on a local TV station, which I'm pretty sure is in La Crosse, Wisconsin, in which a Caucasian boatman, you know, guy just had his boat there on the river, living in it, indicated that some colored guy was on his boat, and he told him to get off, and he went back to bed. And then he heard a splash.
Yeah.
And this turned out, by the way, Mr. Allen, you're still with, what was the date that everyone is now confirming that this boat incident took place? Is there a date that was attributed to it by the TV station?
I am going to go back and look at that right now. That is a good question, Mr. Edwards. If you guys continue talking, just give me 30 seconds here while I
okay, all right.
Look, Matt.
But yes, sir, we would like
back.
You, sir, to know that we are seeing preparation here in Minnesota for retaliatory action against Muslims as an outgrowth of not only St. Cloud, but there is a concern. I've talked with some law enforcement officers who I value their opinions. They are very much concerned, gentlemen. Understand this. M, you can understand if you're still with us. They are expecting the attempt of a car bombing of the very large what is called the Cedar Riverside Towers, which is about, what is it, about a 25-story complex in Etcetera. They are extremely nervous about the fact that there's been interception of intel that clearly indicates the possibility of a car bomb directed at that building.
Well, you know, and the reason I think that's really targeted, you know, that building was made for a certain number of people, and there are four times the people occupying that building.
Yes.
That it was built for.
Yes, four times. That's absolutely correct. And with the problem with HBO, who is doing a HBO series on Mogadishu, Minneapolis, or Minneapolis, Mogadishu, the residents or the people, the guy, the developer that actually owns that building, gentlemen, has refused to allow HBO to photograph in that building. And the reason is that he now maintains that he is aware of the possibility of a terrorist attack on his property. And so the Minneapolis Housing Authority here, not showing a lot of concern, had indicated that they would authorize another smaller apartment building right there on Cedar, 5th, 6th of Cedar, to be used for the filming, if you will. But there are messages coming out of Sandpoint, Idaho, and some other locations, and one other in Nevada, and et cetera, in which individuals are saying that they are preparing for a race war and are prepared to take significant action. And people are running around in this city saying, oh, we can't believe that, and et cetera. And yet, caller out of Missouri, be advised that when you ask them, well, can they explain how these gentlemen affiliated with an organization known as the Crusaders got so far along in their planning that the FBI finally had to decide, particularly when the plan, gentlemen, for the actual bombing of the small complex was to take place on the 9th of November, the day after the national election.
Yeah, and do you know why they wanted to wait until the 9th? They want,
no,
they
sir.
Want
what,
to,
what have
yeah,
you
well,
found
I
out?
Found out what was interesting. They're actually very politically aware. They didn't want to interfere with the election and thought that the bombing might be blamed in part on Donald Trump because of all his anti-immigrant rhetoric that's been going on.
Wow.
So they wanted to wait right after the election to do this.
To send a message to America.
Yeah, to send a message. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they wanted to get Americans to wake up, as they put it.
Which is consistent with the communications coming out of Sandpoint, Idaho. Jeez.
Yeah.
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 And we all are pretending like everything is okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, sir, we appreciate any questions of this caller, him or Mr. Allen, any questions? And I don't know if Mr. Allen has found that date.
Yes, I have.
No.
Ms. Edwards, it was reported Tuesday morning at 9:26 a.m. The story was posted 10:18 at 7:30 p.m. later Tuesday that day. And so they said the body was found on Tuesday. They received a call. The person said they saw something floating in the water, possibly a body, at 9:26 a.m.
My question was, the gentleman who was on the boat and went back to sleep after telling the colored guy to get off his boat, when did he say that that took place? See, that becomes crucial because I saw the broadcast 2 weeks ago when they reported him missing.
Yeah, well, they don't have – it's really unusual because I just pulled up the story from KAAL, from actually News 6, ABC News 6 had it here, and – there is, and it's KAAL, of course, but the paragraph with the guy who's on the boat is kind of buried here at the bottom from the last paragraph. If you don't read the whole thing, you will never get to that very critical piece that should have been brought up to the top and pushed to the left so people would see that right away. But it's just for the last paragraph. It says that dive teams have been searching the water since Friday night after Winona police received information that a video showed someone they believed to be Ben walking near the river. Okay? So that's suspect two. And on the night Ben was last seen, authorities said a man who was on the boat
told him the black man to come onto his boat, and he told him to get off it. The boat owner then went back into the cabin, says he later heard a splash. So,
gentlemen, let me say this. I watched KSTP, Channel 5, a ABC affiliate here in the Twin Cities, interview members of the campus of Winona State, talking in terms of when is the last time they had seen Ben. And they made no mention, but the station itself never indicated that authorities had told them that a white boatman had told them about a colored person being on his boat. And see, I would maintain that the Friday dates that they're talking about is not the not the 14th, but actually 5 days later than that. And I would refer you to the statement by, and this is interesting, the vice president of communications, who is an African-American woman at Winona State, talking in terms of how concerned they were about Ben, but they thought that maybe Ben had gone back home.
To where?
Well, that's an excellent question, because she never said where home was. Was it Chicago? Was it Cleveland? Was it Lagos, Nigeria? I mean, where in the hell was it that he had gone back to? Now, they are playing with dates and et cetera. The Ben just didn't come up missing this past Friday / Saturday. I encourage anybody to go back and take a look at the interviews done by KSTP of at least four Caucasian friends of Ben on campus. Wow.
Mm.
Yeah, well, just another black lives gone. You know, they'll cover that up as they're going to cover up everything else. It's really, I don't know. Again, caller out of the Southern Midwest, we thank you again for the information, and please keep us abreast of the communication that we've discussed with you. If there's any new developments of white terrorist attacks, please alert us as soon as possible.
Okay, I will. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, sir.
Right. Bye-bye.
Right.
Thank
all
you,
right.
sir.
Gentlemen, what? I don't know. I don't know what, you know.
Well, if I could just briefly, you know, this is Mr. M. Is Mr. Allen, are you still there?
Yeah, he's there.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Allen's
yes,
here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
There. You know, I was just kind of, as I, you know, listening to you guys in the program and participating, I was kind of trying to keep an eye on the debate, too. And
yes, sir.
I think just an initial impression for what it's worth, and I think Mr. Allen will probably be ecstatic about this. I think his man trashed her. I think it was just a peppering. I think his man won hands down.
I had
and
just
you know,
switched to the final debate.
That's
I want to get this
pressure.
Clear, M. You're saying that in your professional observation that Mr. Trump may have prevailed?
In this particular debate, I mean, he basically he pulled out all the stops. I mean, he took the gloves off, but at the same time, he dominated the affair, did most of the talking, talked about his relationship with the Russians, talked about how weak the current establishment is, and that how he's made alliances with people around the world and Mexico, and he's in position to turn everything around, and she didn't really stop him. I mean, that's just
let me, if I could, I watched closely her arrival in Las Vegas this afternoon, and I have to say, I'm certainly not going to vote for Donald Trump, but
come on.
I noticed she got off the aircraft.
Doing cartwheels. She's going to be doing cartwheels after this.
Oh, I know it. We will not be able to live with him. But I noticed when she came down the ramp of the aircraft, she looked tired.
Yeah.
She did not have I guess you could say it was a 2-hour flight, an hour and a half flight. But the first thing that caught my attention was that she looked tired. She looked fatigued. She wasn't waving. You know, normally when they come down off the ramp, if there's nobody there for 10 miles, you wave. You know, you wave, hey, I'm here, I've arrived, and et cetera. If you see it later on tonight, that would be the footage of her arriving in Vegas and coming down the flight of steps off the aircraft. Look closely at her. Look at her body language and the slowness of her movement, the stiffness, and et cetera. And I said, wow, she doesn't look like she's ready for a debate.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, too, because that actually came up as part of the debate, but I couldn't really focus in on, you know, about this.
Okay.
Gentlemen,
Mr. Allen has something.
I think we're going to have an exclusive. Someone has snuck a microphone into Hillary Clinton's green room at the debate. Let's see what we hear.
All right.
Okay, I just thought I...
So he's loving this. And see, he's taking a page out of President Obama's playbook of whining and crying. But,
well,
but Tim,
you
please
know,
share
guess,
with us, continue to share with us, because I did not switch over Tim from the studio because of concentrating on our persons calling from Missouri and et cetera.
I think Mr. Allen...
Now, your take that he dominated her in this debate.
I think he's trying to stump for maybe the Herman Cain position maybe next time around. I think Mr. Allen is... But, yeah, I thought that, you know, really she wasn't really able to stand up to his barrages. You know, I mean, he continued to interrupt and interject. I thought the moderator was extremely
Chris
weak.
Chris Wallace. He is
extremely
a right-wing
weak.
Sympathizer. I was fascinated when the announcement
weak.
Made a couple months ago that he would be the final. He is clearly, in fact, Chris Wallace hates black Americans. He hates black folks.
Yeah, he was extremely weak. He let Trump just run all over. I mean, it was really it was pretty obvious to me. You know,
okay.
Like I said, I didn't get a chance, and I'm going to watch the replay in its entirety.
I am too. I certainly will do that upon leaving the facility. I mean, man, Mr. Allen, I mean, let's get you. I know you are.
Yeah, let's get
lethal.
Here from Mr.
Allen. What is your take already on the debate?
Well, I've been watching. I've been streaming it from my Facebook page since
mm-hmm.
it started. So I've been going back and forth. And Trump had no choice but to just come after her with both barrels.
Okay.
Because if he had a weak showing and just kind of played the gentleman role, she would have rolled all over him. But I think that he did a good job from what I'm seeing on social media, because my Twitter page is lit up, my Facebook page is lit up, because I'm a member of some groups that support Trump, like the Deplorables, which is the new Tea Party
ooh,
group.
Ooh, okay.
And I've been getting alerts like every couple seconds. People are like, oh, look at that. Did you see? Oh, he got her. And these are people that are not the normal let me put it like this. The Republicans, the ones that are rejecting Trump, are absolutely quiet right now.
Okay.
Locally and nationally.
Okay.
They're not saying a thing. And the ones that are saying, well, we're not going to vote for Trump and we're not going to do this, and they're elected officials. And it's terrible, because say that something happens and the world's coming to the end and Trump does win. Okay.
Right.
Just say that scenario. Just say that scenario. The Republican Party, as we know it, will never be the same, and those tight white shirts of mostly white men that want to keep the Republican Party segregated to themselves, you know, with the bougie, upscale white guys that just don't care for the black community.
Right.
So that's gone.
Us returning to the days of the Whigs and seeing history repeating itself and the Republicans basically disappearing,
you know,
and if not the rebirth of the Whig Party or some other party?
I actually do, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, you had two people back in the day. You had W.E.B. Du Bois, who thought that black people should get into politics and thought that it was a good idea to assert yourself socially and politically in the process among, you know, the men that he was associated with, and he was a great ambassador, he was a great author.
And then you
and
had Booker T. Washington.
You had Booker T. Washington, who said that, you know, we have our hands. We learn to farm,
we are
to manufacture.
Separated as five fingers on a hand.
Yeah.
Let me do this, Mr. Allen, because this is a question that we've been talking about all day with associates around the country. Give me your honest take on the firebombing in Orange County, actually Hillsborough, North Carolina. How do you read that, sir?
You know, we're looking at open war now. You know, I mean, we're really, I mean, with the things with the Somalis, with the threats, with the subversive groups, and I just think we're in a time of real critical time in our stage here. It's like we've regressed, and there's not a real strong, you know, with our president leaving. And this changing over, there's not a real strong grip on where is this country headed, and where is the leadership? And I think you've got these groups that see an opening. See, whenever there's a void, you'll find somebody that wants to try to jump into that void.
Right.
You know,
the reason. Let me say this: the reason that I asked this question, my column in the newspaper here. Next week, and of course, I had said I would certainly take the opportunity. The firebombing in Hillsborough, North Carolina, / Orange County, reminds me of an action taken by a man by the name of Adolf Hitler in 1939 in a small town just over the German border from Poland. And it was at a time when there was great animus amongst the Poles and the Germans, if you will. Germany was already preparing. They had gone into the Sudetenland. The split up of Czechoslovakia had taken place. And so they were just waiting then to spank the Poles, if you will. Neville Chamberlain had misstepped all over the place in the so-called meetings in in Munich. And one of the things that Adolf Hitler did as a brilliant move of reverse action, as was initially called, was that he took about 30 men, basically military age, from a mental health hospital because the Nazis had become rather crafty in putting you in the insane asylum and etc. He took about 30 Germans, dressed them in Polish uniforms, and shot and killed them, and then had German commandos attack their own radio station, scattered the bodies with Polish army uniforms on, went before the Reichsmark, the German parliament, and denounced the aggression by Polish animals. And I ask you to keep that in mind, Donald Trump's statement of democratic animals. And it was the prelude to the invasion of Poland. And it was many years later that, of course, it was found out that the Poles had nothing to do with the attack on the German radio station, if you will, but it was the prelude to war. And I've seen the same thing because right after the firebombing in Hillsborough, North Carolina, Donald Trump, now, Mr. Allen, I know how you feel about it, but Donald Trump began to talk in terms that the voter fraud will take place in urban areas. Now, that doesn't mean us colored people will be in the vanguard of voter fraud in America. Is that what we're supposed to believe?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily.
Well, he says it's rigged. I mean, come on, he says it's rigged.
Yeah. Let me also say this, gentlemen, because I intend to bring this forward on my next television program, which will air Sunday after next, of course, on this coming Sunday, I've already indicated. I have a heck of a document, if you will, that is indisputable as it pertains to authenticity and et cetera. It is a publication of the Negro in the Congress of the United States from 1870 to 2007. And it's a heck of a book, and I retained it, was able to get it. It's 831 pages. It has every African-American representative and senator that had served in the United States Congress up until 2007. And one of the things, gentlemen, is that 80% of the reflections that are made as the life and of each representative and et cetera, 80% of them were faced with voter fraud in attempting to retain their position, if you will. In fact, it was voter fraud that led to the Democrats, Em, and I know you as a student are very appreciative of this, that allowed the Democrats to regain control of the Southern political platform, voter fraud. And, of course, when the decision was made in 1872 and then the Supreme Court decision of 1873 that broke the back of the coalitions that had been formed by the Negroes, and then by 1901, we didn't have a single black representative in the Congress of the United States and didn't get another one there until 1925. I just say give some thought to this firebombing because, you know, the homeboys are real pumped up about this. You know, they're maintaining that this is a clear indication of a clear and present danger coming from animals and et cetera. Well, we know what that is, gentlemen. That's a cold word. That's the reason, Em, I asked you what your observation was on the firebombing in Hillsborough, North Carolina. Is Em still with us, Don? That sounds like we've lost Don, too. Well, we're down to the last two or three minutes of the program, so I'll just walk us on out the door.
I'm definitely here. I'm definitely
here. Oh, okay. We lost him then. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go. Let me go track him down real quick and see what's
going
on.
Well, that's okay. We've only got about 3 minutes left. And no, that's the reason I asked the question, Mr. Allen. I would suggest that you can go to your own international section and take a look at the 1930 event. I was fascinated when I heard about the firebomb because, see, Orange County
is back with
predominantly,
a
Democratic county.
Yes.
Am I back?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, you're back.
Yes, you are, sir.
You know, what I did want to ask you, though, you know, in relation to that bombing, Mr. Edwards, who did it? Who did it?
You're talking about in Orange County.
In Orange County.
I have reason to believe, and I will make this statement, that it was carried out by right-wing extremists sympathetic to the Republican cause.
I saw, you know, at first when you said that, it kind of threw me, but then it clicked in. You know,
yes.
So who did this? Who bombed this North Carolina GOP building? Firebomb.
Yes. Yeah.
During this
yes.
election thing coming up now,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was a serious. I mean, that thing was torched. If there had been anybody in there, that would have been.
It'd been gone. Yeah.
Gone.
Yeah. I would say keep your eye on it because you would allegedly think that the FBI would have something in play in the next 3 or 4
Ooh.
Days about who they think it is and etc. Keep in mind what I said. In the 2008 and 2012 elections, Orange County, North Carolina, voted for Barack Obama. So it's clearly a Democratic county. Yeah. But then when Donald Trump made that statement, a bunch of animals, I said, oh, listen to the cold words. Yeah. But gentlemen, let us, in closing, Mr. Allen, let us say a silent prayer for a young person of color who died mysteriously in a place called Winona, Minnesota.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Em. Appreciate it, man. And Mr. Allen, let James Brown, somebody take us on home, man.
Let's find James Brown. He's sitting here somewhere. He's ready, too. He's ready.
And
he
also a prayer for a 66-year-old African-American woman gunned down in her apartment, New York City.